Today we celebrate the third Sunday of Great Lent, the Great Fast. It is also the celebration of the Holy Cross. This is called the Sunday of the Holy Cross. You know that there are other feasts of the Holy Cross, especially September 14th. Today we celebrate, on the third Sunday of the Great Fast, the Holy Cross, because the Church presents for us a sign of hope. Here we have now been fasting for a few weeks, and as you know, this Great Fast and all of these Sundays originally are designed for the furthering catechesis of the catechumens, preparing for their baptism. And so, every one of these Sundays, if you look at the readings and the epistle reading, you'll see that they're all perfectly chosen for the catechumen at that point. The catechumen at this point has now been fasting severely. No meat, no animal products, no wine or oil during the weeks. And the catechumen is now famished, exhausted, wondering if it will ever come to an end. Or is it all really worth it? Some of his friends and family are beginning to question this new religion that he's chosen. Are you sure this religion is for you? In the early church, the catechumens were not allowed to bathe. This was a practice we know around the 4th century during Cyril Jerusalem's time. They didn't even bathe during the 40 days of the fast. Now, today, you know, in many third world countries and things, we don't have running water even. You know, you might not get to bathe more than maybe once a week or something like that. But you can imagine after 40 days, the problems. So the catechumens are feeling beaten down. They're being harassed by family and friends, pagans, who are challenging them with this new religion, saying, look at you. Look at what this religion is doing to you. You're famished. You're weak. You smell. And so the catechumen is strengthened at this moment, at the midpoint of the Great Fast, by the cross. The cross is held up in the center of the church, as you heard in the song, in the tree planted, right, in the midst of the earth, to remind the catechumen of what this is all about. And that if he feels like he is suffering, there is someone who suffered a bit more. Now, we also, as the faithful, the baptized, the illumined, celebrate this feast as well. These Sundays have also become, and the Great Fast has become, something that all of the people in the church participate in. To, in a certain sense, strengthen and encourage, to run along with the catechumen on their journey, but also to renew ourselves in the faith. We are always catechumens in a certain sense, always learning, right? And so for us as well, who are baptized, the cross is also a moment of strengthening for us. We know that we will soon be celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. Soon, before you know it, the fast will be over. And so this midpoint of the fast is also an encouragement for us. If in the first maybe week or two of the fast, maybe you had trouble kind of getting it going. Maybe it was difficult, too difficult, and there were some stumblings. Well, it's the midpoint of the fast, and now the church says, you're halfway done with the race. Imagine running a race. I used to run cross country in high school. And knowing that you were about halfway done with the race was a moment of encouragement. And you get a little adrenaline burst. And then towards the end, you start to hear the cheering crowd. You know that the finish line is around the end. And so a little more adrenaline burst. You run a little faster. You get more energy. And so this is this feast, the Sunday of the cross, midpoint of the Great Fast, is intended to be that moment for us where we kind of re-energize, stand up straight, and realize we're halfway done. It's almost over. And now we finish the race, we finish the fast, and enter into Holy Week. In the gospel you heard for the catechumens and also for us, you must take up your cross and follow me. You must take up your cross and follow me. He who is ashamed of me in this sinful, adulterous generation. What does he mean, adulterous? He's not referring in that particular case to actual, the sin of adultery. But he's referring to what's called covenantal adultery, or that is, idolatry. In the Old Testament, when the Israelites failed to worship the one true God, but went to worship the other gods, they had committed covenantal adultery, that is, idolatry, yoked themselves to another god. And so, Jesus refers to the generation in that time as a sinful, not just sinful, but sinful and adulterous, an idolatrous generation. I mean, those Pharisees, they were pretty serious about the law. The scribes? How bad could they have been? This is what Jesus says about their generation. Why? Because we see, as we enter Passion Week, we're going to see that generation, even the Pharisees and the Sadducees who knew the law, reject the true temple of God and make an idol out of the works of their hands, as St. Stephen says, right? The temple in Jerusalem. They decide, this rabbi from Nazareth, he's causing too much trouble, causing too much attraction. There's too many people talking about him. What if he starts a little rebellion and the Romans come in and destroy this place? It is better that one man die, Caiaphas says, than the whole generation, the whole nation perish and the place be destroyed. It's put him to death. So they had made an idol out of the temple. They had made an idol out of Jerusalem. They had made an idol out of the works of their hands. This temple that was supposed to house the glory cloud of God on earth was empty. The glory cloud was not in the temple in Jerusalem in the first century. It had not returned after the Babylonian exile. The glory cloud came among them, and his name is Jesus Christ. And they rejected the glory cloud, they rejected the true temple, they rejected their king, and chose to worship the works of their hands. And so they are a sinful and adulterous, idolatrous generation. Now we might look down on that generation and say, hey, if I had been in that generation, I wouldn't have done such things. And so we witness. And so we witness. Right? Against ourselves. Are we a sinful generation? Are we an adulterous generation? Do we make idols out of the works of our hands? Our car? Our home? Our job? Do we make idols out of the works of our hands? How different are we from that first generation that rejected Christ? Do we, on a daily basis, take up our cross and follow Him? Or are we ashamed of Him in this sinful and adulterous generation? At the workplace, does our fellow worker know that we are a Christian, that we go to church on Sunday, and that this is the highlight of our week? Does our neighbor next door in the apartment or in the neighborhood know that we are Christians? And if they have a question about the faith, they can come to you? Does all of our acquaintances at the grocery store, at the post office, in the neighborhood, wherever we are we too different from that first century? Or do we make idols out of the works of our hands, our livelihood, our life, and raise that up above Jesus? Are we ashamed of Him? Are we ashamed of our faith? Do we carry a cross high? In the public? Here? On Sundays? Or every day of the week? And so I encourage you, as we talked about this last time we had the Feast of the Cross in September, to a very easy way, a very easy way to witness to your faith, to those around you, is to simply wear a cross hanging outside of your shirt. There are places in this world, since the advent of Islam, where Christians have not been able to wear a cross outside their shirt. There are places in this world where church crosses are knocked off by Muslim hordes when the lights go out at night, or sometimes the middle of the day. There are places in this world that if a Christian walks down the street with a cross on his neck, a Muslim will rip it off his neck, throw it on the ground and stomp on it, and he can't do much about it. And yet here we are, in this country, very close to losing that type of freedom. And we are ashamed of him in our generation. And so I encourage you, if you have a cross in your shirt, take it out. Take it out right now. How many people have a cross? How many people have a cross? Take it out. Take it out. I've got this big one hanging here. Take your cross out. Okay? Take it out. Right now. How many people don't have a cross? Okay? All right, now some people, I know you got allergies and it comes in, it hurts your neck and things. I know Laura's got some neck problems. So sometimes it can bother people. But if you don't have a cross, get a cross. I just ordered some more. The ones we had in the bookstore were all bought up yesterday. The St. Basil community had a little retreat and they bought all the crosses we had. So I can't offer you a cross right now, but there will be more crosses. I just ordered some. They'll be here in a few days, okay? On the bookshelf. You can pick one up next Sunday. But take your cross out and we will bless them right now. And I encourage you, having taken your cross out, leave it out. Leave it out. And I promise you that you will find in your workplace, in your neighborhood, opportunities to witness the resurrection of Jesus to those around you. You will not get opposition, but rather you will be amazed at how many people around you, first of all, did not know you were a Christian, but how many people around you will now ask you questions about the faith. And it will usually start with that cross. That is a very pretty cross you have. I've never seen one like that. Oh yes, it is the type of cross we wear at our church. What kind of church do you go to? I've never seen one of those. Oh, and then you reach in your pocket and you pull out from your wallet or your purse the card of the church. And you hand it to them, having written your name and phone number on the back. Right? And you never know what would happen next. Very simple. Very easy. We have the freedom to do that right now. And yet, are we afraid? Are we ashamed? Are we worried what people might say or think of us? Jesus says, if you are ashamed of me in this generation, I will be ashamed of you on the day of judgment.